from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on the Forum program this morning, many in the transgender community are celebrating that Caitlyn Jenner, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, will be on the cover of Vanity Fair and hope the high-profile platform will lead to wider acceptance of transgender people. As part of Forum's In My Experience series, we talk with local transgender people about their stories of transition and hear their thoughts on the nation's discussion about Caitlyn Jenner. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Vanity Fair cover story on Caitlyn Jenner, formerly known under the name Bruce Jenner, Olympic decathlon winner and Kardashian family patriarch, has had a dramatic effect on national exposure to trans identity. At 65, Jenner said she was finally living her true self. What effect has that transformation and the coming out into a trans woman by a gold medal winner and father of five, once described as the world's greatest athlete, had on the transgender community and on those in or considering transition? As part of Forum's In My Experience series, we speak with four members of the Bay Area trans community in this opening hour and get their reactions and hear their stories, and let me introduce them to you. They're all here with me in studio, and we want to welcome Jamie Raffaele Wolf, Vice President, Transgender San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program. We also have Issa Noyola, who is Program Manager with Transgender Law Center. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. And Sawyer Steele is also with us, filmmaker and senior producer of the Moxie Institute Film Studio and Lab. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning to you. And Fresh White, life coach and contributing author of Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all aboard. And Jamie Raffaele, let me begin with you. And Jamie Raffaele is a transgender male to female. And let's begin by the fact that you were saying before we went on there, this is a good time to be trans. The whole thing about Caitlyn Jenner has brought a great deal of excitement. It's also brought some different reactions, which we'll talk about from the trans community, which, like any community, has its diversity with opinions. But you were saying that you couldn't have imagined this. I mean, this kind of exposure and this kind of general acceptance, even, and you're going through what you went through as a youth and a young person?
Absolutely. At the age that I'm currently at, and my childhood, I never even dreamed that there was a way to live the self that I was experiencing internally. I had no role models that had the experience I had. There were no publications that gave a kind of experience that I felt. And I felt hopeless. I felt alone, and felt that there was nobody there for me.
So this is good for the transgender community as you see it? It's something you're enthusiastic about? Because there are those who are saying, well, this is a very special case. You know, Caitlyn Jenner comes in a very different background with all the exposure, Kardashians and so forth, very specific case.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is great that Caitlyn Jenner is able to be her authentic self. We do have to recognize the privilege that Caitlyn Jenner has, and also recognize that while I did say this is a great time to be trans, that's also from my perspective and living in San Francisco, in the bubble of San Francisco. And as my friends here will also talk about that, it's very different for other people in different parts of the country. So while it's great that Caitlyn Jenner is out, open, proud to be herself, we also must realize that Caitlyn Jenner is also a celebrity, a millionaire, and has access and exposure to a lot of avenues that I don't have, that a lot of actually most trans people, I think, don't have.
And it's also a Republican, we should add, perhaps.
I believe Caitlyn Jenner is a Republican, yeah, that's right.
In the Diane Sawyer interview, she said that she was a Republican. Gladys said this is... By Caitlyn Jenner being transgender, it means more acceptance for transgender people everywhere. And I wonder, Fresh White, do you want to weigh in on that? Do you see that?
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
Well, I mean, what I love about what's happening is that people are getting educated and hearing these stories of, you know, someone who transitioned, what she said, 30 years ago and then had to come back and then come back and transition again. So I think that it's really great to have someone on the national stage. And as wonderful that as it is, you know, as a transgendered man, my experience is a little bit different at this time because I'm also African-American. So you know, there's a little bit of a difference in the way that we walk in the world, especially around safety. And, you know, when I see a cop, I'm always a little wary if it's at night, if I'm going to get called out for something.
Well, that sense of kind of a dual identity makes – I mean, I often hear, in fact, that it's harder for transgender people of color than it is for – just being transgender. In fact, white transgender people say that and are very quick to say that.
And this is our society. It's more difficult to be a person of color, you know, in America than it is, you know, to be an Euro-American.
But there's also still tremendous problems with transphobia. And Issa Noyola, let's talk to you, I mean, because you also are a person of color. And in fact, one of the things that you've tried to call attention to from your own experience is what goes on, well, particularly for undocumented people.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a proud trans Latina. My family is from Mexico, from Comitán, Chiapas, and San Luis Potosí. And understanding...
Le gusta su acento.
Yeah, thank you. Understanding my own family's sort of complicated immigration journey, and how when we think about trans folks in the context of immigration, how much more violent that is in terms of the cases that we're seeing, both in terms of the migration journey and then also when DHS and ICE immigration, you know, get a hold of our community and places them in violent housing situations in detention, we see that the experiences of trans folks in detention is quite violent, the torture that they face, the transphobic treatment. Last week, I was a part of an action in Santa Ana, and I was arrested and booked. And that whole experience was pretty transphobic from the guards and from the folks within the booking process. They disregarded our identities. They disregarded our humanity. And it was very much the state letting me know that trans people really don't exist within their context of detention and prison.
So dehumanization that you're talking about that's so troubling. I mean, and I'm just wondering, in light of Caitlyn Jenner, when you think about the issues that you face all the time along the lines you've just outlined, and also think about the difficulties with housing and the difficulties with insurance and the difficulties, you know, go on and on with this sort of thing, hospitals, Caitlyn Jenner still feels good, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's amazing to see a trans person living their truth or their authentic truth and to be able to show society that, you know, we are a part of the fabric of the of this community and that we have existed. I think one of the things one of the narratives that I do challenge is that idea of that trans folks, this is sort of like a huge moment for us when in reality, I think trans folks have existed in all major civilizations. We've been a part of the fabric of every society, indigenous cultures. Trans people played really important roles within indigenous societies. And so I think that...
You go back to ancient times.
Right.
I mean, in fact, I think... let me go to Sawyer Steele on this because you point out like Cupid even.
Exactly.
You go back to ancient mythology, right?
Exactly. I mean, Cupid was recognized as the god and goddess of love originally. And I think that history is really rich and really important. I remember very clearly understanding that for the first time in college. And all of a sudden, I was reading all this discourse about the history of trans people, and it made sense, and it gave me context, and it made, you know, it made me feel like I wasn't – it wasn't a new thing. And – but then at the same time, I do think we are – I like to call it a trans boom, that we're in the middle of a trans boom. And I think that it started really emerging about 10 years ago.
Well, now you've got Orange is the New Black. You've got Jeffrey Tambor in Transparent. You've got Caitlyn Jenner. I mean, all of these things are part of, I suppose, popular culture, but they're also part of a zeitgeist. And there's a great deal more sensitivity on the one hand, though, as you say, when you get out of New York or San Francisco, you face the real America. And there's still just maybe not, even in addition to transphobia, it's just – what's going on here? You know, a lot of people are just kind of befuddled and it's enigmatic to them, you know.
Indeed.
And I'm sorry, I also would say, though, that in California and in San Francisco, we are seeing challenges. We are seeing a proposed bill that would require trans folks to prove their gender identity to use a restroom, mm-hmm. And that there would be fines placed on trans folks if they can't prove that.
Well, in your role Absolutely. As program manager for the Transgender Law Center, I mean, the employment problems are still rife, too, mm. aren't they?
Right. I mean, trans folks across the board already face high numbers of unemployment, and trans women of color face that even more. And so I think that we are seeing the lack of resources for our community, the lack of opportunities for our trans folks to really to engage and to really be a part of a community fully. And we don't see sort of the support systems that are that the rest of society has in terms of employment programs, in terms of training programs. Here in San Francisco, Taj's coalition is really actively engaging City Hall to think about resources for trans communities. This is just a brand new conversation that is emerging. This has not been, even with San Francisco's rich history around trans identities and leadership, we are still seeing this like nuanced conversation emerge within sort of the budget process within the city, within City Hall's sort of agendas around bringing resources to the community.
There's still much work to be done, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Sawyer Steele, also, there's a lot of work that needs to be done just in terms of getting people away from the stereotypes that are attached to it. I mean, your own case is pretty unusual, for example.
How so?
Well,
I think we all have unusual cases.
Well, you all have humans. Individual cases, to be sure. That's, I think, the point. But you're a transgender female to male. Mm-hmm. And even though you were kind of against the idea of marriage, let me see if I have this right. Mm-hmm. You married a woman, beautiful mm-hmm. woman named Kyra, and are, you know, living that kind of almost nuclear family life, or that's what you're planning?
Yeah, and I think that I struggle with that very deeply. I mean, I appreciate it and I love it and I'm very happy and I love my life, but I did live as a butch dyke and a genderqueer person who I wore a t-shirt that said gender anarchist for 3 years in college almost every day. And I went from being the underdog as a woman to having tremendous privilege as a man. And I think that we all observe that in our experiences transitioning in many ways. But that privilege is undeniable, and my experience in the world is very different.
And privilege also being Caucasian.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's still pretty scary to come out in any way, isn't it? And vulnerable, that's still part of the real formidable thing that young people are facing all the time if they want to turn their identities.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of the conversation right now about Caitlyn Jenner is, you know, is she, because of her privilege and because of her millionaire status and all these other factors, is she brave by going out there and making such a spectacle about it? And that's sort of some of the conversation that's happening around it. Of course she's brave. Of course it takes courage. It takes courage for any story, regardless of your gender, regardless of even if you're trans or not, any transformation that a person goes through.
And regardless of whether you're a public figure or just a
exactly.
private person.
And I think there is something notable with Caitlyn Jenner's case is that as far as I can think of, this is the first time that we are seeing somebody who was such a multi-generational celebrity first, who then came out as transgender, as opposed to a lot of the other figures that we know, the amazing Laverne Cox, the wonderful Jenny Boylan, the transparent story, all these wonderful stories.
Well, there were some big stories like Renee Richards, you know, when we go
yep.
back. I'm old enough to remember Christine Jorgensen. You know, mm-hmm. used to always say Christine Jorgensen, the ex-Marine, and that sounded strange to people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the greatest athlete in the world on the Wheaties box now, you know.
Right.
I mean, in some ways it makes it perhaps easier or not.
I think it puts a little bit more of a human – in terms of cultural convention, it seems to me so far in the past few days even that it is gaining more traction to lead to more understanding because of that. And it reminds me of something that a friend told me recently, that there was a misunderstanding that it seemed like he didn't want to be outed as transgender, which happens very often, and that should be totally accepted and understood by everybody, that there's a lot of transgender people who are not out and don't want to be identified as such. And the misunderstanding was that he said, it's not that I don't want to be outed as transgender. It's that I don't want people to know that I'm transgender before they meet me. Mm-hmm. I want them to know me as a person And then if it comes out, that's fine. And I think that's a really important statement.
Let me hear some of your stories. Fresh White, when did you come out and how did you go about it?
Can I, for a second, just talk about we do have a transgender employment program at the SF LGBT Center.
Ah.
We see hundreds of people a year. So I'm a trans an employment specialist there focusing on trans people. And what I want to talk about is in my client, you know, we see like hundreds of people. One of the biggest barriers is being homeless. Right. So even before, you know, so there's one thing to be trans and in the middle of transition and not maybe fitting into the binary, big challenge. But then there's the homelessness where you can't even, you know, where do you put your suitcase? So I just want to bring in that point.
Yeah, no, very important points.
The mecca of San Francisco for trans people. So I started identifying as male when I was about 6 years old or earlier. So I already knew.
And this is here in San Francisco? Or
no,
where'd you
New
grow
York.
Up?
Yeah, I grew up in New York. Yeah. And I was introduced, and you know, of course, I was actually labeled female at birth. And I experienced trans women probably at around 14, 15 years old, and it seemed like the most natural thing to me. It was pretty amazing, but never had any vision of being able to transition to male. And very much embraced my not so much my femininity. I've always been masculine, but my womanness. So there's something really magical, I feel, about being a woman. And I didn't transition until I was 48, so I'm going on 3 years as
you're pretty young looking living. 48, if I may say.
Yes,
so.
I'm very fortunate. It was like a rebirth.
Jamie, how about you? Let's get your story.
Yeah. Well, I also want to say that, like, the trans communities, and there are trans communities, it's not just one blanket umbrella, are kind of looking at the Caitlyn Jenner story also with a lot of trepidation because we are not historically represented. The trans people are not historically represented so well in mainstream media. I think what we've seen in MSNBC, every mainstream media except Fox News, I think has been overwhelmingly supportive, using proper pronoun usage, seeking out GLAAD or other type of trans competent media representatives. So that's been great. My own experience was I lived a very closeted experience, a very masculine experience. I played a lot of sports. I like stereotypically masculine pursuits, but I also have a lot of so-called stereotypical female pursuits that I love, but was so closeted and embarrassed and fearful of what might become of me. I repressed and suppressed that down.
We're talking
so
about
much.
Shame, right?
Shame and just fear of being assaulted. You know, gay bashing was a term in my childhood. Smear the Queer was a game that we played on the playground. Anti-homophobic sentiments were rampant during my childhood. I didn't quite have the term, and I don't know if the term transgender was as all-encompassing as it is now. So I didn't have a real context to understand even what was happening to me. And I would hope that trans and gender nonconforming people listening to this right now will feel empowered, but also will be cautious and will seek out a lot of, whether it be TEI at the LGBT Center, the Transgender Law Center, TransThrive at API Wellness. There's a lot of organizations now that are out there helping people.
So well, you were what age when you decided? And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles. So I grew up in the Valley of Los Angeles. But also, like, I'm also a Jewish person, and I grew up in a somewhat Jewish bubble. That while it was very open and human rights were respected and civil rights were encouraged, there wasn't so much talk of anyone who defied a gender norm. And in fact, those who did, at least those assigned male at birth who, you know, maybe had more femininity than society could stand at the moment, were labeled gay and they were harassed. And I remember I didn't want to feel that way. And I remember how I remember how a lot of males at my school who were talked about as gay were treated, and I was fearful of that. I was also, as I transitioned later in my life, around like 18, 19, and I literally would go out my door thinking I would never come back, thinking that I would be killed, that this honestly would be the last time I would ever come back.
So you're living in constant fear.
I lived in constant fear.
I mean, you know— these stories are so compelling and I'm hoping, like you are, that young people who face these problems can at least be enlightened and illuminated by your stories. But at the same time, they're scary stories. And
they're scary. But Issa, it gets better.
Well, right.
For some.
You just have to keep
some.
Thinking that, right?
Not for all.
Issa, you grew up in a pretty religious home. And so we're talking about other kinds of obstacles. Yeah.
So I grew up in a religious home. And I think that just like from the early age of 4 years old, I remember like in expressing my femininity, not only was like, not only like as a child, like I was expressing myself in terms of the things that I wanted to do, in terms of the ways that I wanted to have fun as a child, like were deemed as not just wrong, but also sinful. And also like, you know, like ultimately continuing to express myself in these ways would lead me to hell, essentially.
In addition to that, you have the whole machismo thing, right?
Yeah, which I think is complicated because I think that, you know, just like in thinking about the ways in which these Latin American countries, and in particular Mexico, where my family's from, has been colonized. I mean, one of the first things that the colonizers did was to really destroy the history and to destroy artifacts and things that meant so much to our communities. And so I think to me that was part of that was destroying this this gender piece and this identity around how trans folks and folks can really think about gender in a more complex way. And so for me is to think of myself as a trans Latina is to reclaim actually that indigenous heritage and to reclaim that indigenous culture that has been taken away from us.
Right, we're going back to Aztec times and all that.
Yeah.
Really. Sawyer Steele, let's hear your story.
I grew up as a really big tomboy in a family on the East Coast and in New England, and I think that the first time I think like many voices here had no idea that transgender was out there, that that was a possibility. I didn't have any role models. I didn't have any connection to anything. I did have a wonderful accepting family that sort of let me just play sports and be a tomboy.
Forgive me, but when did you see Boys Don't Cry? Because I know that had quite an effect, didn't it?
I remember seeing Boys Don't Cry. I think that was the first story that I saw about a trans person. And I think what's unfortunate about that is that it's a wonderful film, for sure, but it's a story about somebody being killed. And it's also not told from a trans perspective. I don't think I realized those things at the time, but I think that that is an incredibly different thing that we have now, that with the internet and social media, there are millions of opportunities to connect to different voices. And if you want to find out information, you can go online and you can listen to stories. You can watch stories.
Talking like the colleague of Tiffany Schlein that you are. Right?
Michael, for real, the internet changed my life and changed the lives
absolutely.
Of many people.
Changed the lives of most trans people,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Seeing yeah. that there is a life that's possible changed my life.
Well, we're going to allow our listeners into this conversation. In fact, we're going to invite you into this conversation and certainly like to hear from some trans people and your response to the Caitlyn Jenner. Well, it's been quite an extravaganza. We're going to have a reality show built around it, in fact, that's imminent. But you may want to give your own responses and you may want to talk about your own experiences. And we'd like to hear from just our audience in general with questions or comments. There's a great deal of confusion between medical and legal, between sexual and non-sexual and all of that. And you may want to talk about the personal stories you've heard. We do welcome your involvement. Our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. That number is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us again at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post questions or comments there, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Part of our In My Experience Transgender Transitions, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Many in the transgender community are celebrating that Caitlyn Jenner, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, will be on the cover of Vanity Fair and hope the high-profile platform will lead to wider acceptance of transgender people. And as part of Forum's In My Experience series, we're talking with local transgender people about their stories of transition and hearing their thoughts on the nation's discussion about Caitlyn Jenner. And the name Caitlyn was, I guess, selected because it means pure. At least that's what I'm reading, and I'm just getting educated also by Fresh White into the etiquette about asking about names and so forth. But it's fascinating as to why each of you chose the names you did. I mean, they were not in any case. Well, I don't know. Sawyer, was your name Sawyer?
It was not.
Okay. Is that out of verboten, out of etiquette to ask you even something like
that? You know, I think it's really complicated. I wouldn't try to speak for every person of trans experience. But there are a few things that are not my favorite, at least, questions to have, which are, what was your birth name? Have you had surgery? And help me out, guys.
Well, there are questions that are just damn outright rude. I mean, mm-hmm. there are people who will ask, especially for somebody who has had surgery, you know, they'll ask about their sex life. Now, you wouldn't ask normally about
exactly.
people's sex life.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems to me to be something that ought to be off limits and verboten. And yet it's kind of interesting. Jamie, I want to get to our callers here and everything, but I was reading something that you said about somebody saying to you, oh, and you're so normal. Like, I'm so surprised that you're mm-hmm. On the one hand, you want to recoil from that. And you want to say, you know, look, this is who I am. But at the same time, you realize you have to educate people. It's a kind of paradox, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah. Well, often people think that the trans representations that are currently in society, that the stereotypes that often we need to fight back upon are pornographic. That's the number one stereotype that I encounter, tranny porn and so forth. But that's exactly the point, exactly what Issa's talking about. We're here and we've always been here. And it's not we, it's just humanity is very diverse, and humanity's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. Our hair color, like what we like and who we like everything's diverse. So yeah, of course I'm normal. I'm a normal person and
whatever
so
that word
is
means.
Everybody who's trans. and yeah, like we're all normal and abnormal.
That's right. Well said. Let me mm-hmm. bring our callers into this, and we'll do that right away here. We'll go first to Lynn in Nevada. Lynn, join us. Hi.
Oh, hi. I was born in the American South, where obviously macho race were very strongly felt. Having grown up there, finding a way to really understand this in a non-threatening way, I found the book Middle Sex by Eugenia Dees to be an amazing eye-opener for me. And I want to know if your panel has any other suggestions, or you, for educating those that are so possibly blind to the broader and more intimate human element of identity crisis, whether it be gender or all kinds of identity crisis, but other ways for us to educate the general public.
I'll give a self-centered plug here for this hour that we're having. Send it out. Send the link out and to as many as you can on social media. But what about books and movies? Anything come to mind? Eugenides' book is a good example, mm-hmm. certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity to talk about trans bodies, trans selves, which is a resource guide for both transgender people who are still sort of looking for finding a place to learn about their identities, in addition to the many stories and resources, whether they be medical or social. It's for both trans folks as well as people outside the community. And there are many individual biographies that are out there.
Lynn, we thank you for the question and appreciate hearing from you. I want to go to more of our callers. We'll go to Mark next. Mark, join us.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
How does your panel respond to the claim that American Psychiatric Association considers transgender a gender dysphoria, a mental disorder that's treatable?
Mm. Yeah, it reminds me of Michelle Bachmann's husband, taking gays and changing them into heterosexuals, mm. supposedly, and all that sort of thing. I mean, most of you really, from a fairly early age, it's the old Johns Hopkins study, you know, that was done that said there are people who are, at a young age, see themselves, as Bruce Jenner said, now mm. Caitlin, saw myself as a woman. I always saw myself as a woman. More difficult, by the way, to transition at that age. I mean, in terms of the body and all that sort of thing. But for so many years, had seen himself as a woman, and now is a woman. So, but how do you respond? It's a troubling and vexing question, because out there, American Psychiatric Association and all that, the DSM says this is a mental disorder.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so concerned with the DSM-5 says. What I am concerned with is the people that reference the DSM-5 then move forward with what they think that means. The policing of our bodies as trans people is extremely pervasive, and the gatekeepers of trans healthcare have come a long way. Kaiser is now covering, you know, gender confirmation surgeries, hormones. But one of the reasons I'm here in San Francisco is to get trans competent healthcare, because the gatekeepers that prevented me from getting the trans competent care I needed, hopefully now with the DSM-5, with the gender dysphoria rather than a gender identity disorder, I mean, I hope and plead with the medical community that stop policing our bodies and help our minds and help our minds and help our bodies.
And we should mention that in addition to reassignment surgery, there are hormone treatments, there's breast surgery, there's facial feminization surgery. There are many options out there, but it is certainly troubling that and vexing that this continued notion of mental or disorder persist. Let me get some more.
Can I add one thing that, you know, it's and as other panelists have mentioned, we've always been here. The dysphoria is with the society that believes that there are only two genders. So we just want to be really clear about that.
I want to read something from a listener who sends this via email. Writes, I am a parent of a trans teen whose identity, gender, and otherwise is semi-fluid at the moment. A question that I have grappled with and that Caitlyn Jenner's transition and Vanity Fair cover has raised for me again is around trans identity and gender roles and stereotypes. The cover really upset me, as the first thing I notice is that she is posed on a stool with her hands behind her as if she is tied up or restrained. She wears a rather Victorian boudoir bodice, hardly a garment representing empowerment and freedom of movement. It seems like the expression a true gender identity that comes from many trans folk gets expressed in ways that seem to underscore extant gender stereotypes. For this reason, I often find myself exasperated, if not exhausted, at gender identity conferences and support events. Can anyone provide some insight on how I can perhaps feel a bit less frustrated by what transition seems to so frequently loom like? I was getting so happy with being post-gender, and now I feel like I'm expected to celebrate expressions of gender identity that reinforce old, stale ideas of what it means to be a man or a woman. You're all nodding your heads.
Yeah. I mean, I just think going making connections to both what, like, society or institutions or the state are reinforcing in terms of messages of who I am as a person. I, as a trans person, I, as a Latina, proud Mexican, cannot rely and cannot look to the media, cannot look to popular culture to really define who I am. Because who I am is so complex, and my identity is has been a long process and a long journey. Even before I even came in, you know, manifested myself here on this earth, my culture, all of these things have brought me to this place of who I am. And so, to me, in thinking of the ways in which trans and in myself, how I am challenging in walking and in living my truth day to day as I'm getting my coffee, I am challenging the ways in which we are defining what it means to be a woman in the society, what it means to be a trans person in the society. And I constantly am, you know, folks look at me in my presentation and I leave an impression. And so for me, that is, to me, I know that I'm living my truth, and I'm also challenging in my everyday sort of navigating of the world these sort of ingrained ideas and notions that are very much in this place of being stuck. And
but I think how about the state in this? It comes to my mind because I think there are three countries. I'm not sure of this because it seems like Sweden would be way ahead of the rest of the nations in this, but I believe only Denmark, Argentina, and Malta have options that
Australia allow. As well. So this is fresh. Australia and Thailand.
Where you don't have to declare your what pronoun you are. You know, I mean, you have complete freedom in terms of gender identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Let me get some more callers on here, and let's go to Jesse next. Jesse, join us.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My basic tale is I was raised straight, but I met a transgender person, actually intersex, born intersex. And it struck me as completely normal. So I was very interested that your guest had that same observation about, you know, being exposed to it and having the same reaction. And I was with my, at the time, kind of more towards masculine and feminine, so I'll say husband for now, but she's since made the full change, Aaron, for 8 years. And eventually we broke up, and I started to realize that I was gay. And part of that was looking back over my dream life, because my mother was a dream interpreter, so I kept track of my dreams. And there's a gender bias in dream interpretation that I wanted to give everybody a heads up on. And that is the whole animus-anima thing, the animus being the inner masculine person, the anima being the inner feminine. And the argument, the attitude is that it's just symbolic of energies within the person having nothing to do with the outside world. But I'm here to tell you that if you have 10 years of dreams where you are a man kissing a woman and you're a woman, you're gay. If you have 10 more years after you've tentatively decided that you're straight and you're trying to kiss a man and it's not working, you're gay. So, it's funny.
This is your acid test. This is your touchstone, obviously. <Yeah. laughs> Thank you for that. Actually, I appreciate the call. Occurs to me, though, what about, I used to think about this when the first trans surgeries were going on back in the day. John Hopkins put itself on the map with that, dating myself here to some extent. But the realization that people might actually change their minds? I mean, or think, I want to go back to the gender that I was born. I mean, that may not be the case, obviously, for anybody here. But, you know, we've got a wide range and continuum of different humanity here. And there are people who certainly could feasibly say, even though I thought that and I felt that I was, you know, as a man, I felt I was a woman, now I want to go back to being a man, or I feel I am a man, or whatever.
Gender and sexuality are both fluid, and for most of human population, we exist somewhere on that spectrum, and so that's totally understandable to, you know, have fluctuation throughout your own life.
Which makes the decision all the more momentous and all the more extraordinary in many ways. Listen to this. This is an email from a listener named Megan, which really gives me a great deal of hope and makes me feel good. My cousin started dating a lovely girl named Helen while in college at Oberlin. One year at Christmas, my cousin came to our big family celebration, and her girlfriend was now a boyfriend. My large Midwestern family was a little rattled at first. It had been a lot for them to wrap their minds around the fact that my cousin was gay, and this was another level of acceptance for many of them. For me, a proud Bay Area liberal, it was inspiring to watch them all come to embrace my cousin and her boyfriend. Even my born-again Christian aunt and my 93-year-old grandmother now completely understand the situation and use proper pronouns. My cousin and her boyfriend were just married last week, and I'm happy to say that the whole family rejoiced for them. We'll go to another caller. This is Ray. Ray, you're on.
Hi, so I'm a gay man, and I have plenty of transgender friends, but I am surprised over the fact that there is like a 30% suicide rate, as documented by multiple nations, for transgender people. I know there's a whole host of medical issues concerning transgender people, and I'm not hearing this program address any of those, and I'm not hearing the transgender community talk about them. I mean, all we're talking about right now is a change of identity, but we're not talking about the secondary and life-threatening issues behind them.
Well, you're right to bring those up. I brought them up, and we could spend an hour on each of the issues that you just enumerated, but who would like to say what their concerns are along these lines? I mean, we've heard some of that, actually, but Ina?
Yeah, I mean, I just – that is sort of – why the Transgender Law Center and many organizations on the ground here in the Bay Area and nationally exist, because we realize the context most trans people face, which is very actually violent and very gruesome and not so pretty and aesthetically sort of in terms of being able to portray it on a front page of a magazine. We know that like 78% of transgender and gender nonconforming youth grades K through 12 have alarming rates of harassment and end up dropping out, and which then lead to sort of like suicide ideation or these other sort of like obstacles. Working with transgender youth, even though transgender youth and youth in period are resilient, but we do see the ways in which they are stigmatized, sort of the bullying is then catapulted, right, because they are wanting to express their gender identity in school. I think that to have a show solely dedicated around the violence piece, even like that trans women of color are facing. I mean, here in San Francisco, we had a brutal murder of Taja de Jesus.
Where we have done shows on that. And of course, we've done shows on what you raised, the bathroom issue and all of the different things related to medical concerns and psychiatric concerns and so forth. I mean, there's just so much we can do.
Right.
I don't mean
right.
to cut off discussion here because it's important, as the caller said. Jamie?
In 2010, there was the Injustice at Every Turn. So it was the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and the Center for Trans Equality that put this that put out this report. And this report, I believe, is where the 42% of trans and gender nonconforming people attempt or have some type of suicidal ideation. What we find with like programs that exist, programs rely on data. And if there's no data to support any type of this is what this community needs or this is what this community needs, then we're not going to have any support. Now that there's more trans visibility, there's going to be more money going towards data and going towards real kind of support services for trans youth, for homeless youth, for more kind of TEI job outreach responsibilities for our community. And once we have more data, we'll have more programs and there'll be more money invested in our communities.
One of the things that moved me about that listener who emailed from Ohio, that story about Midwestern folks, and I'm from Ohio, but also you came up with a figure, I believe, that only about 5% of Americans actually have any kind of encounter with anybody who's trans. Where do you get the figure?
That they know of.
That they know of.
Right, that they know of.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Where do we come up with a figure like that? Just, do you know who the poll operation was or? I'm just curious. Yeah.
Potentially, it may come from that survey. It's a figure that I hear all the time, usually a 1% to 2%. I bump it up to 5% at least because, as Sawyer also said, it's that they know of.
We had a caller earlier who was asking for things that could be read or seen, and we got a couple of interesting emails here along those lines. Melissa says, Beyond Magenta is a great recently published book for teens and middle school kids about trans and other gender identities. That's a valuable.
I would also say Janet Mock's Redefining Realness is a great autobiography, and it's her journey and all that she faced as a black trans woman is an amazing story as well.
And you got Julia Serrano's Whipping Girl is one of the best books. Little shout out to Julia. But that's, I think, one of the best books for trans people to read in addition to I gave it out to family members. I gave it out to friends. I would encourage people to read that book.
Well, since we have been talking a lot about culture and identity, here's Rajan who writes, I am curious to see if your guests think having a transgender superhero like one of those X-Men characters would be trivializing their experience too much. In an ideal world, wouldn't this be seen as a superpower, being able to experience the world in more than one way? And also, if they could talk about things that help them as youngsters, it might be helpful for the general audience. So you got two questions in one there. Well, let's take the first one. Would you like to see a superhero?
Certainly no harm in a superhero.
Caitlyn Jenner certainly is kind of a superhero.
If it was created by a trans person or a team of trans people.
For sure.
And what about the second question that's raised here about things that might be useful for young people who are struggling in terms of your own stories?
I mean, community, I think that to me, that is where in whatever age group you find yourself, whether it's young folks, whether it's adults or senior citizens, community is the most important thing. Like isolation is what really impacts a lot of these issues. And so to have a community as a young person, as a child, and find other folks, we're seeing trans youth come out, younger and younger. And so to find a support, a supportive community that can really affirm sort of all these complex identities.
You can find them online.
You can find them online, and you can find them in various pockets. You'd be surprised, actually.
Mm. In addition, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Fresh White.
I've been going into schools from fifth grade up with the San Francisco Speakers Bureau, speaking in Marin. So there's actually people that I work with across the country who go into schools and speak. Not just with the staff and the administration, but also have conversations with the children and youth around what trans is and what's possible.
Well, we'll go to more calls next. Suzanne, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi. You're on the air. Go ahead. Suzanne, are you with us? No? Okay, then we'll go to another caller. This is Charles from Palo Alto. Charles, good morning.
Oh, good morning. So I'm calling because a question about the gender and sexuality bit is that I'm a gay-identified transgender man, and what I've found is that I've had difficulty meshing sort of sexually and romantically with, like, cisgender gay men. And some of it I found is, like, femophobia, like, has to do with sort of gender expectations of how men should act, but also with sort of embodied expectations like people's images of what sort of sexuality should be, which my body doesn't necessarily approximate to. And I've got a question for your panelists in terms of, has this been anybody's experience, sort of what the experience of meshing within gay communities has been? I don't know, perhaps even advice, I suppose.
Right. So I think it's not just our heterosexual sort of like communities that need to have a consciousness raising around gender and gender expression, gender variance. It's also our queer communities, our lesbian and gay brothers and sisters that, yes, we're all lumped in together in this LGBT community. But quite honestly, I'm having to have the same conversations and educational, conversations with my sort of queer and gay and lesbian brothers and sisters. So I think that to me, I'm not surprised. And I definitely have heard that with my other trans masculine identified community members who do identify as gay and are faced with these challenges.
Oh, Charles, good luck to you. And thank you for your call. I'm looking at an email from Sam now who writes, aren't the images of Jenner on the magazine cover and people's treatment of it a form of objectification of the trans identity? Jon Stewart had a montage last night of news folks saying fairly retrograde things in celebration, like ranking her next to other women. It seems to be one of the consequences of having this discussion in the celebrity media. And in fact, some of the pictures inside Vanity Fair, I was told, were kind of almost cheesecake. And, you know, again, it's a different kind of objectification, but it is objectification.
It's not. Is it different or is it misogyny? I mean, basically, she's
a sexualization.
Just, right?
Yeah,
exactly. So I don't know if it's that different.
I guess we're going to try Suzanne again and hope this time that... Suzanne, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm 50 years old, male to female, and I'm in the middle of transitioning. I've been out in Novato for the last year. Unfortunately, I am not out at work yet. I work from home. A lot, and only when I'm in front of customers do I am I not allowed to be Suzanne. And I'm on.
Excuse me, not allowed by whom?
Well, it's a choice. I guess that's the wrong wording. I'm going to come out next year, but I chose not to come out at work yet. I'm a little afraid. I'm quite afraid. I work for a company in Sacramento, and I'm not too. I'm not too hopeful.
You don't think they're enlightened? Let's put it that
way. They're not. I work. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I work for a very male-dominated, white male-dominated company, and you know, I hear all the jokes and all the comments about gay and lesbians. You know, trans isn't even on their radar. I'm sure there might be some jokes at work today, but I am going to come out then. But you know, I'm on a time schedule, and I think I'm very visible in Novato. I'm very visible in the recovery community, and you know, I've had a lot of support in Marin so far.
Well, I would definitely say that fear is not unfounded. I mean, we know that 90% of transgender people have reported experiencing harassment of discrimination at work. So I definitely think that where you're coming from, you're like. And that's the best that any trans person can do. They know their boundaries. They know that they know their own truth and how they want to live that out. There should be no sort of like this is what there's 1, 2, 3 steps that you need to do in order to be authentically trans. And everyone's journey is different, and everyone has to assess what does safety mean for them in terms of their workplace, in terms of the relationships that they're navigating. And it's such a personal thing, and you have to find community support to uplift you during those difficult moments.
Oh boy, what I feel especially positive about this hour is you're all so different. I mean, not only in terms of your gender identities and your backgrounds and the way you look and the way you talk, and I mean, everything about you shows people have in their mind often this kind of objectification. They have a kind of stereotype, obviously, that just sort of sticks to them or that they stick to and don't realize the kind of range of humanity that we're talking to and about.
Can I add as a resource that the San Francisco LGBT Center's transgender program, along with Transgender Law Center, go into corporations and businesses, and we do trainings with staff and HR. So if you need any support, you can contact Fresh, right? I'm the only Fresh probably in the Bay Area, at the San Francisco LGBT Center.
I want to read another couple of emails here. Here's Avi who writes, it's important to note that while you can find gender dysphoria in the DSM, having it as a diagnosis also allows mental health providers to bill insurance for the distress that may accompany transitions or merely living in a society that continues to marginalize this population.
Yes.
Another listener, Kelsey, writes, I'd love to hear some specific examples of a time and gesture by a neighbor, colleague, or friend that showed they accepted you. What did they do and what was the impact? It's a good question.
I always say, what can – so allies, so someone who's cisgender, non-trans, what can they do to support the transgender community or a trans loved one or a trans friend? The number one thing that I tell allies to do – which was supportive to me, go in public with your trans-identified friend or family member. Show support in public with a bunch of other people looking at you. That meant the most to me.
Let me come at that from another angle. I'm looking at another email here that takes almost the antithetical. What do you say to radical feminists who angrily reject transgender fake females, fake in quotation marks?
I've navigated that actually as doing a lot of the advocacy work. I've navigated feminist spaces, feminist Latina spaces, academic spaces, and there's definitely been that backlash and that pushback around what is it like, you're not an authentic female, you're not an authentic woman. And so having to continue the dialogue it takes many conversations. It doesn't just happen.
Well, we've had a great
president.
One here this morning. I wish we could go
time.
On, but thank you all for the time you've spent
thank
with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Good
thank
luck
you.
To all of you. Jamie Rafaela Wolf, Isid Noyola, Sawyer Steele, and Fresh White. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. When we return, we'll return with Michael Tilson Thomas, who is joining us and celebrating his 20th anniversary with the San Francisco Symphony. Thank you for being a part of the program and for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.